I'm Dream Queen. You're in the cab with me. And my buddy Travis Stroop is back here. We're in a book club and we are talking about Khalil Gibran's The Prophet. Good morning, Travis.
Good morning, Jada.
Yeah, look at him. Get it, bringing in. So excited to have you here again. Thanks.
Always an honor to be here.
Appreciate you. Bless. Before we get way into it, Tool Talk with Travis, can we just plug that for a minute? Thanks for taking your time out of your morning before this.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things I love to talk about anyway. And so it's just an opportunity to run through some basics about wood and connection devices, nails, screws, what they all do. You know, I have so much in my brain that I take for granted that, you know, to explain it, I almost have to do it and see how I'm doing it. And that came after years of being willing to screw up and just, you know, keep moving through it. And in learning so much, if I knew now what I knew back then, maybe my knees would be okay, my back. You know, I was like, there's a lot of things I could have skipped. And tools have changed a lot over the years. So right now we're at a place where, you know, you can build a house out of a small bag of tools. So I think it's just nice to catch up and make sure everyone understands just some very basic things. Not everybody reads the instructions.
I'm that person that does, and I annoy people standing next to me. But I'm like, let's look at the map real quick, please. I really like how on the PSA here, it says you aim to encourage, empower, and inspire.
Yeah, I feel like the world of tools has always been part of the like weird man culture situation of the past. Things have moved beyond that. And so, you know, there's been not a lot of safe space where people feel like they can come and without judgment go through all of the basics and feel like, you know, comfortable to learn. And it's not so much learning. I was just revisiting the, you know, poem on the teacher, on teaching, and how knowledge is within you waiting to be. And so I feel like I'm not so much explaining this to anybody, just trying to tickle that part of their subconscious that already knows everything I'm saying. So that, you know, when they're running that tool, they're feeling it in their hand. They're really like understanding the blade spin, direction, everything that's happening. Being present, that's the most important part. Like we ruminate on stuff constantly. And if you do that when you're using a blade, you know exactly what could happen. You don't want to chop tomatoes while you're like thinking politics. It's a bad combination. You know, this is when, you know, and ruminating is that weird voice and you have to know how to quiet that voice and be present for that tool. And that's like a respect of sorts.
Quieting the mind. Like I mean, I'm just staring at you right now, thinking about the thing that I got wrong in the last hour. And it's the worst. Yes. Like, I'm like, how can I exist in all of these different places at once? Because I'm in the past. And when they say being here now is the most challenging thing we can do. And if you're not being here now, you're going to hurt yourself with that tool.
Yes. Yeah, they call it the primal impression of, you know, it's the being in the moment. It's your primal impression of what is exactly all of your senses taking in right now.
Yeah.
And for me, bubbles do that. Nature do that. Art does that. You know, certain things. Carpentry does that because it demands a certain respect for the tool. And even though over the years I've learned how to use those tools in ways that the companies will probably not like, but you know, the confidence has come from a lot of mistakes and learning from those mistakes. Sometimes I'll make a mistake and think, oh, that's also a technique. Like, you know, I didn't even know that could happen that way. And so it's just to be engaged with something, to take that next step. A lot of people watch YouTube videos, but then they don't walk right out and try it. Mm-hmm. You know, and or they might try it and hurt themselves because they don't quite understand how each tool works because they didn't have somebody either explaining it to them or yelling at them, and you're under pressure to understand all this stuff. And I don't think learning should happen that way. That's not, you know, my inner voice, my ruminating that happens is often in the language of those characters who are yelling at me. And so I've learned to understand that if I start hearing my brain come apart and judge me, that thing is lying, for one. You know what I mean? Like, none of that even matters. If I'm not in the moment and present, none of those things matter. But I can think about times where I had stage fright 20 years ago and still feel that feeling of, oh, and then sit there and think about it for an hour if I want to. Or I can, like, try to breathe, walk away, blow some bubbles, build something, do anything, get my body moving, because that's also part of it, the circulation of your blood to your brain and everything. If you ruminate, a lot of times your breathing will slow down. Like, it becomes shorter.
Yeah. And sometimes I find that I'm not breathing at all.
Exactly. I almost have to remind yourself to breathe because your mind is so deep in thought. And that's a crazy place to be when you have to think to breathe. And that's that thing with breathing exercises. It's almost like a reverse technique. Like, when you're feeling calm, you breathe a certain way. Well, if you're feeling anxious and you go to that type of breathing, then suddenly all of your, you know, energy kind of calms down. You can almost get rid of that inner voice. It's like the first job of any walk I take in Madrid is to try to stop that voice. Otherwise, I'm just walking around in my own brain talking to myself constantly about all these problems I can't reach, because that's easy. And instead of thinking about the problems I can reach inside of me that are related, you know what I mean? Like, I can say someone's yard is a mess, but if I look at my own yard, it's just like my disconnect with Facebook. Like, man, some of these posts and stuff seem really douchey. And then look at my own and I'm like, oh, man, it's the same thing. It's like, it's a factory for making you do that thing, you know? So, you know, there's all these struggles in my brain, but it doesn't feel good when you're there, you know?
Yeah. Gibran doesn't discuss evil in this poem. He discusses more good and what we are not, which is we are not evil. And Dr. King, toward the end of the show, I referenced in the Unfulfilled Dream Sermon. I don't think I read this line, but he discusses how humanity is at the mercy of two charioteers, and our personalities are being pulled in different directions based on what he calls a tension at the heart of the universe between good and evil. Hinduism, he says, refers to this as a struggle between illusion and reality. Platonic philosophy used to refer to it as a tension between the body and soul. And Christianity and Judaism refer to it as a tension between God and Satan. But whatever you call it, there is a struggle in the universe between good and evil. Now, not only is that struggle structured out somewhere in external forces of the universe, it's structured in our own minds, in our own lives. Psychologists have tried to grapple with it in their way, and so they say various things. Sigmund Freud used to say that this tension is a tension between what he called the id and the superego. And I think Gibran talks about that as well, that this is something that goes on within us. And maybe Christianity has taken over in his capitalist society, where we're always looking out to blame someone else to distract from what the true problem is, what you're saying.
Yeah, it's like the difference between seeing the solutions are through dealing with the symptoms or the cause. You know what I mean? That's kind of where our political divide is at now. Like, there's a lot of things we look at and say, okay, this is a drug and alcohol problem, or it's this, and so we've categorized it. But a lot of people who are seeking quick relief have way something deeper that they're trying to avoid, some dark work that involves the so-called evil within them, something they've done, some past experience that they need to work through. But because they don't, the easy way is to just take a quick break. And I totally get that. Life is tiring. And, you know, it can seem like an easy break until suddenly it doesn't. And it affects your finances and your health and everything along the line.
There's so many things we're saying that are leading right into the poem. I want to touch on one more point before I go there. Last night, I was trying to fall asleep and I began to listen to myself read to me in my mind, The Mastery of Love by Don Miguel Ruiz. I'm just trudging through this book because I need to finish it. It's short, it's small, it's there, Four Agreements, blah, blah, blah. And I know, you know, it is speaking of douchey. It is, you know, written in this way that I'm like, ugh, Don Miguel, really? But then I find myself underlining some things. And there are some really points that he makes really simply that when I'm cringing all the way to the point, and then he makes that hook that I'm like, oh, well, yeah, that's exactly true. like, but he calls it the parasite. He says that that voice in your head is that judges. Well, there is the judge, but there is the parasite that wants you to feel bad. It's so easy to fall into those negative feelings. And I haven't retained from that book why that is in us, except the only thing I can think of is that if we are raised from childhood with negative impressions and negative thought from family members and also from other kids and other adults outside of our world and through the TV, then we are now like those black mushrooms that are growing out there in Chernobyl. I don't know if you've seen those, but there's new research coming out about this fungus that is living off the radioactive material out there. And I don't know. And that's my first thought. It's like, is that good or bad? And it's like, it is neither. It just is. Mm-hmm. It is life persevering through this radioactivity that would kill any one of us after prolonged exposure. Something life has found a way to manifest and evolve through even the worst situation. Mm-hmm. And we could say, yeah, we become fertile ground for negative thought in this culture. And then the parasite is allowed to dig in. And then he also made the connection that when we are in relationship with people, we have to be very careful that because the parasites want to talk to each other. So your parasite and my parasite want to find common ground, as do our heart centers. And I try to act from that place of how can I make myself and you feel good? And I acknowledge, Jada, you're being too vulnerable. You don't know that guy. How can you love him? Why are you doing this? Put the wall back up. You know, that wall that's got you absolutely nowhere in your entire life. Right. It's like, even when I thought it was protecting me, it just got me into more difficulties, right? But that parasite, and then you say, well, I'm going to make a self-deprecating joke about myself. And then my parasite's going to laugh at it and double down on it. And then I realize as I see how, especially in masculinity, that we jab at each other verbally. And that's our parasites feeding off of each other. Can you talk real quick about what you were saying off mic about, I don't want to use the term toxic masculinity, but you were talking about the manness around tools and also just being a
sage. Well, the manosphere. I mean, it started in the world where I came from, things were pretty ridiculous. Like everything in your world on the job site, it seemed to be like, there seemed to be like a gender-related situation in the conversation. Like the language was built a certain way. Like if you're riding in the middle of the truck,
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Called,
yeah.
You know, you throw like a girl, whatever. Yeah. Like all of the things seem to be like some kind of weird, as if that was the polar opposite of your good, mm-hmm. was feminine weakness. You know what I mean? Like some kind of thing like that. You know, throughout the years, throughout the changes, you know, I remember when the first female police came on the force. And guys were talking about, I'm not pulling over for a lady. You know, I remember all these little things, the conversation in the house, like I wear the pants in the house. Like none of those things really sunk in until later in life. And I started replaying those conversations because that's the ruminating voice in my head, the parasite. You know, it wants to make me believe that any of these things have any validity. But I've trained women in carpentry. I know there's really no difference on a job site between one human and another human being, but I've also had to watch other people that are, you know, not ready to be there mentally because their parasite is so strong, telling them that if they do good, then that's going to make me look bad, which is a crazy thought. You know, when you're all trying to do something together and all of a sudden things start breaking into factions, even gender is ridiculous. Like, I guess that's what I was talking about as far as the tool class and whatever. There's not always a safe space mm-hmm. for everybody. And so for us to create safe spaces where there are none seems like a pretty neutral, I don't know, good, bad, whatever, but a very neutral thing that we can all do, that we should do, and it's what creates community and good conversations about how are we going to open up some kind of pathway to the new truth that we know we have within us, that somehow we can live more dignified than this. You know, we can do better. We want to thrive. We don't want to live. We want to thrive. You know, we want to see all of that come together, and we don't want to see somebody lose in the process. So.
I kind of do, though. I mean, I want to see those lizard people lose. I don't know. And then I'm like, if they are lizard people, are they just really hurt lizard people? Like, so Little Queen Trasmond and I have talked about Elon Musk on her show and, you know, and on this show. I think when we were talking about the loving your enemies, the sermon on the and I'm just like, how do I, you know, that we think about Elon Musk growing up in his household, so isolated in this cold family, and you know how he must have felt as a child, his only person being the TV, and now he wants to go to Mars. Or is he really a lizard person from Mars that doesn't have a soul? And you know, I just and that is really. But I don't know.
Pain and feelings are real. I had this conversation yesterday with somebody. Like, if you don't acknowledge feelings, you're not acknowledging the moment and the reality of things. And it can be hard when your experience is different from someone else to acknowledge their feelings. It sounds like they're coming from somewhere crazy. But whatever you're watching, the feelings are real. And, you know, if we don't start dealing with ourselves as if feelings are the most important thing. Like that's why they're getting demonized on certain levels, because it's a scary place to go. You know, it's hard to look at someone and say, okay, I hear all these things that you're saying, and I want to acknowledge that you're having some feelings.
Yeah.
My experience is different, you know, and I have different feelings on the matter. And without doing that exchange of acknowledging the feelings first, it's hard to get to step two in a conversation, because, you know, it turns into a hero, anti-hero, or whatever situation. But the bubble is real. Like, people live in small areas, start to believe some strange stuff just because they want to fit into their own group. They're afraid to go outside of the conversation because all of a sudden you could be ostracized. So it's a trap, you know, to our morals, all these things like form the gates around our mind.
Well, this is a trip. So, you know, I've been experimenting with thoughts of the multiverse. And when we think about being in control of our own reality, if the reality that you want to live in is your bubble and you're okay with this in this part of your evolution, then why not stay there? Isn't that a universe, a microcosm that is created that becomes someone's entire reality, and therefore they don't have to live in my universe? It's almost benign until you start keeping children captive and women, you know, captive, and you can't educate people on what is outside of the bubble. I mean, when you're taking captives, that makes it hard. Yeah. But when we choose to go to our commune, you know, and say, this is, I live in a reality where everybody is in harmony with the land and we have peace and love and we're the who's holding hands around the trees, and somebody else can come and say, that's not real. And like, it's pretty doggone real to me because that's where I live here in Vermont with my topless lady friends running around in the woods. Until, you know, and somebody may never come and take your land.
Well, what is hope with that? I mean, hope for me is the thought that anything is possible. And how would you know unless someone came and showed you?
Did you hear about the cat who got arrested? Where was this? I can't remember where it was. But a tourist went into this previously uncontacted tribe, a protected tribe somewhere here on the planet, and gave them a Diet Coke and got in so much trouble with the government officials that manage that island and was detained and has to go to court. This is a recent story that I saw over this week or last week. And if you Google Diet Coke uncontacted tribe, and is that deal, you know, that you're going out there and taking something with you that's changing now the whole landscape of a reality.
Yeah, the gods must be crazy.
Yes, I had that Coke bottle. I know. And it's so, but and that's the weird world that I can't understand. And as it was having me picking apart the multiverse is, yeah, I saw a movie about this. And didn't that guy see that movie? Like, why are you taking Coke out there to this untouched tribe? What are you, crazy? And but, you know, it's like the idea of premonition or manifestation of, you know, are we just doing this all in a loop? And are we all just doing this in a loop? It's so wild to consider, you know. Should I read the poem?
Certainly.
All right. Everyone, you're listening to KMRD LP, Madrid, New Mexico. I'm Dream Queen, and I'm in the cab here with my friend Travis Stroop, and we're in the book club talking about Khalil Gibran's The Prophet. You can go to In the Cab Radio at Instagram or Facebook or Linktree and find all the links to previous episodes of the show. And I just real quick, if you're not familiar with The Prophet, Al Mustafa has been in Orphalese for 12 years. He's getting ready to go home. His ship has become pier through the mists on the water and the horizon. And he's walking down to the water. And all the villagers have come out and say, hey, you're so wise. While we wait for your boat, will you answer a few questions? And he's like, sure. What you got? One of the elders of the city said, speak to us of good and evil. And he answered, of the good in you I can speak, but not of the evil. For what is evil but good tortured by its own hunger and thirst? Verily, when good is hungry, it seeks food even in dark caves. And when it thirsts, it drinks even of dead waters. You are good when you are one with yourself. Yet when you are not one with yourself, you are not evil. For a house divided is not a den of thieves. It is only a divided house. And a ship without rudder may wander aimlessly among perilous isles, yet sink not to the bottom. You are good when you strive to give of yourself. Yet you are not evil when you seek to gain for yourself. For when you strive for gain, you are but a root that clings to the earth and sucks at her breast. Surely the fruit cannot say to the root, Be like me, ripe and full and ever giving of your abundance. For to the fruit, giving is a need, as receiving is a need to the root. You are good when you are fully awake in your speech. Yet you are not evil when you sleep while your tongue staggers without purpose. And even stumbling speech may strengthen a weak tongue. You are good when you walk to your goal firmly and with bold steps. Yet you are not evil when you go thither limping. Even those who limp go not backwards. But you who are strong and swift, see that you do not limp before the lame, deeming it kindness. You are good in countless ways, and you are not evil when you are not good. You are only loitering and sluggard. Pity that the stags cannot teach swiftness to the turtles. In your longing for your giant self lies your goodness, and that longing is in all of you. But in some of you, that longing is a torrent rushing with might to the sea, carrying the secrets of the hillsides and the songs of the forest. And in others, it is a flat stream that loses itself in angles and bends and lingers before it reaches the shore. But let not him who longs much say to him who longs little, "Wherefore are you slow and halting?" For the truly good ask not the naked, "Where's your garment?" nor the houseless, "What has befallen your house?" Khalil Gibran, the prophet, on good and evil. Your face is wet. Your face. Yeah. What you feel in there? You close that book, put it down.
It's powerful.
Yes, sir. Yeah. I like to leave it a little room there.
No, I think we all like, we like our archetypes. Mm-hmm. And it reminds me of, like, you know, art imitates life. And a whole lot of superhero movies coming out lately. Mm-hmm. And the themes that go through them are about, with power comes responsibility, you know, because within the word responsibility is the ability to respond. That's what the power is. And so, you know, I don't know exactly where I was going with all that, but yeah, you know, I feel like the archetypes, the good, the evil, the hero, the anti-hero, we're trying to see both sides of a perspective. Like last night I had this crazy thought, like if a rock were to invent a computer to see itself, would it look like us? You know what I mean? Just like, what?
Gosh, this AI thing. If a rock created a computer to see itself, would it look like us? Is that what you said?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. We're stardust, right?
Yeah, yes.
And that's kind of the thing.
Yeah. We are made up of all of these elements. Goes back to something I referenced not too long ago, and again, I read last night. I'm just taking in too much information at once. But this idea of, if you cut off your hand, do you cease to be yourself? And it's about not being the body. Mm. That when the mind identifies with the body so much so that we become our bodies, then we're off track. Because the body has needs in order to survive. It has requirements, I should say. And the mind exists. Consciousness exists. And the brain needs food and water as well and sleep. But the mind is something outside of the brain. Now I don't know where I was going with that. I didn't even smoke anything this morning, y'all.
No, what's crazy is the mind uses a lot of the calories.
But yeah, to operate the brain.
Yes.
But if we are, so when we are out of our body, that's what I think I was going with it, is that when without the consciousness, the body just ceases to exist. Because I was thinking about that too. I'm like, but there I was associating my consciousness with my actual brain. We don't know what happens to people who are in coma when we have no brain activity. And those folks can come back and say, I died, or I left this realm and I saw these beings and I had this experience, all while you're sitting in the chair next to their hospital bed, wondering if they can hear you reading to them, right? And the brain is, you know, being kept alive by, you know, machines or a fluid. And, you know, there are so many stories of near-death experiences, in my air quotes, y'all can't see this, mm-hmm. about the journey of the mind outside of the brain. It's something to...
It is. I've had a few myself, and it's funny because... You know how sometimes when things are going right, you get suspicious?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what near-death experience was like for me. You know, for everything to suddenly get a little too vibrant and beautiful and to be a little, you know, really at peace, like this moment of like, this is a Garden of Eden. I can't believe how amazing this is. And then that thought now triggers the response of, oh, you better check yourself, because that feeling happens sometimes as you're leaving. You know, like it was in moments where I've been injured alone in the forest, whatever, and not realized how injured I was, you know. And so it's funny now, sometimes when I see things looking extra beautiful, I'm like, uh-oh. Check my surroundings.
No, sure you stay right with it. Because that's the idea of the multiverse, is that we don't die. That our consciousness can enter another dimension that is can be similar to this one, but as we continue our work, we're in a parallel universe, so to speak. Speaking of superhero movies, and I feel confident bringing this up because I just went down a rabbit hole earlier this week and then shared it with some folks I was hanging out with on Wednesday. And then I went back down the rabbit hole on Thursday because I told this woman I would send her all these links. And I'm like, I was in that bowling alley talking about this way out of sight stuff, you know. And this lady did not know me at all, but she was on my team. And we're just getting to know each other. And she's a counselor. I automatically, my parasite was like, don't be talking this esoteric stuff to this lady. She's a learned, you know, therapist, and she's going to be diagnosing you right here. And I'm like, parasite... You know, this lady asked me. I mean, she could get up and sit somewhere else, you know, and it caused all the self-doubt and things. And so I came home and I'm like, let me get back in this rabbit hole before I send her these links and check my work. When we're talking about CERN, the collider, the big mm-hmm. Machine.
Yeah, super collider.
The super collider. And I remember, experience. Yes. And my mom called me up in 2022 when they were said that Sweden, I think it is, that where it is. And they're like, they're going to turn this thing on, Jada, and we don't know what's going to happen. They're going to be a rip in the time-space continuum, and we're all here like Stranger Things, right? And so when I was going down this multiverse rabbit hole, there was a woman on there that was talking about CERN. And the idea, because it goes with your near-death experience, bear with me, because this person had been in a car with her two kids driving. Now, her TikTok is involved. She's laying in a hospital bed in a neck brace, and she's giving a live, and she's like, y'all, can somebody please explain to me what just happened, because I think I went through a portal. And she said she's driving to Walmart with her kids, looks down at her phone for some reason, just a blink, and when she looks back up, she's somewhere she doesn't recognize. And she says, where the are we? And she's like, I'm in my mind. I'm thinking this, but I'm also speaking it out loud. So my kids, who are in the back playing on their phones, are looking up and they're like, Mama, no, for real, where are we? And she's like, I take this road to Walmart all the time. It's the only way I go. And then I look back at my phone and I put in my GPS, and I was 30 minutes from my house. No idea how I got here. Pulls over at a stop sign to make a U-turn. And a car comes out of nowhere, slams into the back of her. And the people in that car said she wasn't there before. And she's like, that's how I got in this neck brace, was because those people rear-ended me after saying they didn't see me. And me winding up a half an hour away from my house with no idea how I got here. And then there were subsequent commentators on it. And the host of the compilation, she was saying that she was in an accident and had a similar situation where everybody's life was changed, where it was the worst car accident ever, but nobody died. And the idea that the Mandela effect, that little things are different than you remember after your near-death experience, quote-unquote near-death. And so there are some suggestions that you may have actually died, but your consciousness just went to another dimension. This other young woman who had a similar story. Now, these are all unrelated, just a TikTok stream. A person that I follow compiles TikToks and then comments on them, usually metaphysical and spiritual stuff. And so the other lady said, I think I died, and I think there are people who are mourning me, who put out Facebook posts on me, and I can't hear them. But she's like, I was in a car accident. I survived it. Things are not the same as before I had that accident. I almost drowned I think I was 6. And I talk about this experience on this show a lot. And it is, I relate to what you're saying, where I went underwater. I was told not to do what I was doing. And here's that's another aspect of this whole thing. What experience is the soul here to have today? And so the experience that I was having was, I want to go down in this water. And there was some part of me that was testing it, and there was algae all over those. There were steps leading down into the lake. There were people watching water skiers, and the guardian that was there with me had told me I could sit on the top step, don't go no further. Well, I inched my stubborn self right on down until I lost footing and slid underwater. And I remember thinking at this young age, 6-7 years old, grasping at the step, and my hands were sliding through the algae and I could not get a grip. And I panicked, the thing that we do when we're freaking out. And then at some point, I remember seeing the white light of what I perceived to be the sun coming through the water. And I remember saying, oh, I guess I'm dead. I guess I'm gonna die now. And then I relaxed. And the next thing you know, I'm on the shore. And that white light and the peace that came over me, and everything felt a little brighter and so I, after watching this, I'm like, did I die? You know? And like, what changed me? What part of that changed me? You know? It's really interesting.
It may be the most in the moment we ever get to be.
Yeah. It's a lot like a mushroom trip, I'll tell you the truth. Which is the other part of when I had a pre-life experience where I'm like, I remember before I was born was a tiny, not a lot of mushrooms, a tiny little piece of a chocolate that was, you know, very minuscule. But I hadn't had that medicine in years. And I went to sleep and I had a dream of pre-life, pre-birth and a conversation with my guides about not wanting to come here. And they're like, you know, you're up, you're ready to go. But it's a lot like that same experience. I think that's why mushroom medicine is coming to the front at this time of awakening.
Mm-hmm. I think it's important. It helps the connections between the left and right hemisphere of the brain. And, I definitely encourage people to try it if they haven't on a micro level and just see, you know, where it takes you. But
drugs are evil.
Oh, well, this,
they open the door to Satan.
The definition to drugs in my brain has always been something that goes through a laboratory.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where that ever changed. You know what I mean? There's a difference between something we've been related to forever and what goes through a laboratory and is presented as an extraction.
I wanted to touch real quick on this line here. In some of you, that longing is a torrent rushing with might to the sea, carrying the secrets of the hillsides and the songs of the forest. Gibran's talking about the longing for our giant self. And in others, it is a flat stream that loses itself in angles and bends and lingers before it reaches the shore. And of course, there's so much here, but right there, I wanted to bring it to just being our most authentic selves, which is what I think is drawing you as others to you as a leader, or as I've jokingly called you, but not so jokingly, a sage, is in our being, our authenticity resonates with people. And in our work to quiet the parasite within us, others are able to come through and bounce off of us and be more their authentic self. And I'm looking for a place in life where I can be less torrent and more flat stream.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to just be here on this planet and live the love and continue to grow. I admire the flat stream old guys who just seem to have that chi.
Yeah. Yeah, I see Stella as that flat stream out here sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like there's a lot of us like running around, exhausting ourselves in conversations and stuff. But I always feel like I see her walking calmly into the revolution every day. And that inspires me.
You Stella!
Know? Yeah, it's just a very like, I'm doing this thing. All the things that we're talking about, mm-hmm. she's already doing the things.
Yeah.
And I see people like that, and I believe that diversity and meeting other people, emulating the good in them, and, you know, just trying to raise life-affirming vibrations,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Because we really don't know what people are going through in their minds, too. And, you know, not just talking about that one individual, but other people where I've looked at, and I'm like, man, you're so cool. You're so calm. Like, you got this. And they're like, I am having a literal anxiety attack right now.
Right.
Right? But we just grace. That's a different form of grace, is to say, I don't know.
That's just it. That's grace itself, to say that you know that you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's a very powerful statement.
Oh, people. Well, when am I going to see you again? When are you coming back?
Well, I am your neighbor. So you can always holler anytime.
All right. We'll get together and discuss this, because I think I'm going to try to get Gwendolyn Bad DJ on before she goes to Hawaii. And then when Michael comes back from LA, you and Michael are going to sit down with me and we're going to talk some more about the prophet. So I don't know what to tell y'all to look forward to for next Saturday, except to look forward and be here now. Don't look forward. Just be in yourself now. Travis is giving. He'll be talking power tools at a Skillshare gathering today at noon, free and open to all. Bring your own tools. I'm sorry. There's so many thoughts. I'm not here now.
Dude, there's so many things for me to talk about at the tool class. Like, I'm pretty much bringing the tools. But if you've got something strange that you think I might not have, then bring it. I probably know how to use it.
Maybe you could teach Travis some. Look at his ego. Yes. He's like, if you got something I never heard of,
bring it,
because I'll probably know how to use it. Okay, Manoverse.
No, yeah, okay. I got called out.
That was real, baby.
That was real.
All right, y'all. I'm going to end this with a song. Travis, give him your love, and while I pick what I'm gonna listen to here.
Yeah.
That's it?
That was pretty much it. I was thinking about a line this morning that stuck with me in a song. Like, if your night would turn to day, a lot of people would run away. That's a Bob Marley line from Who the Cap Fit.
Yeah. Take 30 seconds and say,
well, you think about the things that we see as a revolution, other people see as an attack.
Yeah.
You know, because it gets into the topics no one wants to talk about. Greed and, you know, the things that cause the imbalances and imbalances. You know, it's when I think of the Bob Marley line, like what's revealed to the babe and suckling, or what's hidden from the wise and prudent is revealed in the babe and the suckling. Mm-hmm. Well, if you raise kids, equality is what they understand before anything else.
It's true. Yeah. And that's why people get into it. Like, you can't do as I say, not as I do. They're like, I want to do what you do. What's different between us? Right? They come in with that.
They come in with that.
That's because they didn't come from nowhere. We are all here. They know what's up. It's the remembering. Mm-hmm. It is the great remembering. I would bring that back when you were talking about tools and just getting in that vibration of, you know what you're doing. Your body. You know
what you're doing. Yeah.
You know.
Now, yeah, try walking into a room full of kids with a plate of cookies and giving them all to one kid. See what happens.
Yeah, that was down with, what is that? I played that Krishna Das, and he said, treat people how you want to be treated. And we hear that our whole lives. And I always think about that, you know, from the good angle. If you do good to people, then the good will come back. But it doesn't always. Sharon Jones has the song, people don't always get what they deserve. But Krishna Das said, as the audience laughed after he said that, he said, punch somebody and see what happens. And I'm like, oh, you coming with the flip, you know. All right, y'all. Thanks for tuning in. Indicab Radio at Linktree. Find all the fun. I'll see you next time. In the Cab Radio is produced by Jada White, a.k.a. Dream Queen. Original theme music produced by Baby Weekend Boys and Icky Mac the Beat Jugular. Learn more at In the Cab Radio at Linktree. Thank you so much for tuning in.